On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Everybody, I'm here with John Gentile of the Minnesota Twins organization. John, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Thanks, Chris, for having me. I appreciate the time that you're putting into this. I was the AA strength coach with the Twins last year in Wichita, and I have been transitioning to the new rehab strength conditioning coach position that will be based out of the complex starting in January.
What was your journey to the Minnesota Twins? I know you've been with a few organizations or a couple of organizations before this. So what was the journey that kind of led you to the Twins?
It's pretty in depth. I can kind of start. It started off in 2010 with the Detroit Tigers organization. I was there for four seasons. After that, we had that the club wanted to go in a different direction. I was at that point in time, I was not CSCS certified. So a handful of us that weren't certified were either told to get it. And if we got it, we could stay on board. If not, good luck to you kind of thing. They were fantastic. Javar Gillette, Chris Walter at the time were fantastic mentors of mine. They gave me my first break in pro ball. And at that point, I transitioned to the private sector, worked at a Globo gym, transitioned to a private facility afterwards. Then I found out that I really wanted to get into baseball. I really wanted to get back in, and it was my passion. My wife and I recently got married, and we were looking to start a family. I let her build her career while I was in the private sector. So then I decided to go back to school and get my master's degree. And I completed that within a year, pretty rigorous curriculum, but was able to get it done. Basically, it was a 10-year gap from my undergrad to grad school. So trying to get back into the swing of things there. Took that, I kind of refreshed the old anatomy, S&C, brain, and took the CSCS again and passed it. So then I was on the job hunt to get back into pro ball. It was pretty rigorous at the time. Weren't many job openings, I wasn't what they were looking for, which is okay. And Trevor Schwartz of the Colorado Rockies gave me the opportunity to get back in 2020. We all know how that year went. So we don't need to elaborate on that. I was furloughed back in May, which was kind of a killer knife wound to the stomach, and just kind of really rethinking what I wanted to do. And then the job board came open again, but there was also the restructure of the minor leagues with getting rid of affiliates. So we were kind of hoping and praying that we would get called back to go to Colorado. And if that was the case, or if that wasn't the case, what other organizations were hiring? And there weren't many when that came. And if there was, there was an influx of resumes and high qualified people getting ready for those positions. So I went back to the Rockies in 2021. And I was based out of Fresno, California there, their low A ball club. We did really well. We lost in the championship series there. Then came back and being part-time that season, my job was over once the season was over. So I was back on the job hunt again. And I had a few feelers out there. I know I interviewed with a couple ball clubs. I interviewed well with the Reds, and I thought that went really well, but they decided to go in another direction. So then a big mentor of mine, Aaron Rhodes, who's now one of the big league guys with the, with us, the Twins, he was with the Cardinals. He was the Cardinals coordinator at the time, kind of called him to vent on it. And I knew that the Twins were hiring at that point. They just posted a few positions. So he already got that position with the Twins. So I just reached out to him, kind of vented, like I said, vented towards the position I didn't get with the Reds. And a couple of days later, I had an email from Ian, and they wanted to interview me. I had that interview within literally 5 to 7 hours. Ian called me back and was like, "Hey man, we want to bring you on. We don't want to let you go," kind of thing. And that's pretty much all she wrote. When we were all reported down to Fort Myers for pitching camps that they had in January and was headed to Double A. I was originally supposed to go to Cedar Rapids, but they wanted to move me up to Double A. We had a little higher level of experience, which I feel that I was more than qualified for at the time. So that fit the mold really well. So here I am going into year two with the Minnesota Twins. It's been quite a journey for me and my family. This is actually my first full-time position in pro ball. So it's kind of riding it out for 6 years of the part-time seasonal status. So I'm pretty honored for the Twins to bring me on board and retain me for another year.
It's a story of perseverance, man. And I know when you were seasonal with the Rockies, I'm very close with Trevor, and I know he spoke very highly of you. And it was just trying to find a place for you to fit, man. And like you said, there was just an influx of people applying and not a lot of jobs, and the COVID situation really hit a lot of people hard. And I mean, kudos to you, man, for sticking it out and just trying to, you know, stay in baseball. And I tell everybody that, like, if this is what you really want to do, like, you got to stick it out, and sometimes it sucks and you got to grind through it. But once you get that spot, I can tell you're very thankful and appreciative of the Twins. Like, once you get there, you know, and it's an awesome feeling.
Yeah. It's like one thing stuck with me. Like, once I knew I didn't pass the CSCS after the Tigers, that's my fourth year with the Tigers. I talked to Javar on the phone, and he kind of maybe this certification isn't for you. And I mean, he was all supportive of what I wanted to do in my journey of strength conditioning. But he was like, if you want to do something else, like there's other certifications out there for you. And that kind of resonated with me for a long time. Like, I don't want to say I fell into a deep hole of like depression. That's not what I'm trying to say. It's more of kind of just put it in neutral and cruise control kind of thing. I was like, okay, cool. I'll just go work at a gym. I'll go to a private sector. I'll train soccer moms, whoever needs to do this. And then just that one day, my wife and I were talking. It's like, hey, I'm gonna go back to school. I want to get back into pro ball. I'm gonna pass the CSCS. I think that Javar's comments were just constantly circulating in my mind. Like I said, not in a bad way. It was just more of like fuel for my fire kind of thing. It's just not to say he didn't believe in what I could do and be productive in this industry. It was more of like, hey, there's other options out there because right now it's not working for you, but you don't have what we need. And so that kind of stuck with me to just fuel the fire, stay driven, stay focused, and just put the pedal to the metal and just kept grinding it out. And now, right now, it's paying off, all that hard work and the networking and connections that I've built along the way. And so that constantly is, it still fuels me. It keeps me motivated, keeps me on my toes, and making sure I don't ever put the car in neutral and just stay forward and look ahead of look forward to what is being brought upon myself and my family.
Yeah, man, for sure. I think every day in pro ball is just a day longer than some of us anticipated being here, and we should never take it for granted. And, you know, every day that I drive into Fenway, it's like I never take for granted the fact that I'm going to Fenway Park for work, and that someday it's going to be taken away from me. And when it is, it is. But in the meantime, like, I'm going to give it everything I have, just because you never know when it's going to be taken away. And we all work so hard to get to where we want to go. And, you know, I'm sure your journey isn't going to end here as a rehab guy with the Twins or anything like that. But you know, there's a message there, like the perseverance aspect really goes a long way. And I think sometimes people hit adversity and they're just like, nah, I'm out of here. And like, pro ball is going to give you a ton of adversity. And I think if you push through that, for like sure. it's genuinely worth the fight, I think.
No, I 100% agree. What we get to do on a daily basis, we get to go to the ballpark every day. We get to train professional athletes. We basically are the hands-on operation for what they do, and we're with them the most. And like, yeah, it creates long days, long weeks, long season, but it's something that you have to have the passion for, and it's just about staying focused, and it's overcoming perseverance every day because there's new challenges every day. But in what we're doing, it could be weather, it could be it could be anything. Change of schedule, a guy's sick, we have a COVID outbreak, so you gotta like, just different things. So yeah, not taking anything for granted is definitely a motto I continue to live for daily.
How about this new position that you're transitioning into? I know it's kind of going to be a new thing for you. Just what are you expecting in this transition, and you know, how do you think this is going to help you long term in your career?
Being like the most amount of rehab that I've done with guys is when I was in the Florida State League and with the Tigers, and we would have the rehabs over there as well from the complex. I don't think it would be any different than what spring training would offer. It's you're going to the complex every day. You have your own schedule. You have a small group of guys, or however many group of guys, and it's kind of a mixture of spring. My feel is kind of a mixture of spring training on a daily basis with kind of an affiliate feel, with having your own guys to worry about and getting them to graduate rehab to go to an affiliate or go to the big league squad and practice their craft, get better at their craft. I think the change for me is going to be the same city, being on a bus for my affiliate life is no longer for the time being. And it's going to be different feel, earlier mornings, but earlier afternoons, get off a little earlier. I think it's a better way to maybe hone in on my ability to rehab the players on a strength conditioning side, my ability to build relationships and build a rapport with the PT staff, because I'll be working hand in hand with them on a daily basis. People that I haven't really worked with in the past, especially this past season, because they're all based out of the complex and I was up in Wichita. So I'll be able to work with them more hands-on. And you're having a different level of talent from, it could be a 40-man guy to a big league rehab to a complex guy that they all need to be challenged in different ways. So I think at that point, it's going to be, how do you handle all these different personalities, where when you're at an affiliate, they're kind of all roughly the same age, maturity level, kind of training age and stuff like that, where we're going to have a vast variety of different ages, maturity level in that sense. So I think I'm up for the new challenge. I don't think it's a new task. I think it's something I'm looking forward to. It's a new challenge. And it's kind of what I told Ian when they offered it, is like, I'm ready for this challenge. I think I need to be pushed in a different way. And I think that could help me ultimately get to the big leagues by being able to rehab a wide array of players and show that I'm highly capable of doing it on a daily basis and doing it for the whole year.
And the part that you left out, of course, is more family time. Less travel equals more yes. family time, right?
Or at least you're home. So. You're right. Yeah. I think so, because we'll have Sundays off. So I'll be able to travel home on Saturday after the workday is over. So I'll be home at least once a week. But the family will come down and visit. Like during spring training, they came down a few times. I came home a few times. It's not that far of a drive. It's especially early in the morning. If I leave my house at 4:30, I get there by 6. It's not the same way when I'm heading north, driving through Sarasota and all the snowbirds are out. So but you're right. You're 100% right. It's more family time as well. So I'm looking forward to that, but also looking for the new challenge of what the new role is going to offer.
Of course. Yeah. It sounds like a great next step for you. And, you know, I'm hoping for the best for you, man. It sounds like you're ready for it and it's going to be awesome. So, you've been in and out of baseball now. You've been with a few different organizations. So I'm curious to know what your best professional baseball story is.
All right. Couldn't narrow it down to one. So I have two, one short and sweet. 2012 Florida State League champs. With the Flying Tigers, that was probably one of the best feelings, accomplishments that I've ever felt in my life, of winning your organization or your affiliate actually winning a championship and feeling the burn of the champagne in your eyes and just knowing that you have that accomplishment. And that, like, we went up against a team that currently has 7-8 big leaguers in major leagues right now. And we had a few, but that team was far more superior on paper and we just grinded it out. So that just felt super rewarding. Going back to 2010 was my first year in pro ball. I was in the New York Penn League. And that was the first year of the Connecticut Tigers. And we had a bus trip out to Jamestown, New York. We finished that series and it was a night game and our bus broke down as we were leaving the ballpark to head back to Connecticut. And we had a 6+7 hour ride back and they couldn't even get us a new bus because there's no companies open on a Sunday to get us a bus. So we're sitting there waiting to see if a mechanic could. We're in a 7-Eleven parking lot, seeing if mechanics can come out and try to figure out what's wrong with this bus. It's like Sunday at 10 p.m. and nothing's budging. The bus wouldn't go over 25 miles an hour for some reason. And so we ended up spending the night in Jamestown. Like, we all got like 5 hours of sleep. And we woke up, got on the bus, made the trek back. And we had a huge promotion. It was like Halloween and August promotion or something like that. And they literally canceled the game because we were way too tired to play. Like, guys had no sleep on the bus, no nothing. And that's when we took one bus everywhere. And so guys are double up, this and that. And they literally banged the game because it was probably one of their biggest ticket sale events of their inaugural season. And we didn't even play. We got back at like 5 p.m. And the first pitch was supposed to be like 7:05. And they're just like, just get in your cars, go home. Game's banked. So that was like one of the first experiences in pro ball. And then like that was just like the icing on the cake when it came to some of the other things that I've witnessed and been a part of.
Bus breakdowns are like a classic minor league story. And that one, the Penn League, like, has a special place in my heart. I never worked the Penn League, but where I grew up, most of the kids that I went to high school with ended up going to college at Jamestown Community College. So I'm very familiar with Jamestown, JCC, like the Jammers. We used to go to Jammers games all the time as a kid. So staying the night in Jamestown, I can only imagine what was going through everybody's head. Like, why are we here? What is happening?
Yeah, especially since we were already there for 4 nights. And it's like, we are all looking forward to getting out of here. And like, bam, we gotta spend another night. And we spend a whole evening in a 7-Eleven parking lot. Just everyone's, for those that are able to drink, we're drinking beers and just trying to make the best of the situation that was at hand.
That's a very like appropriate minor league thing sometimes. It's like, just making the best of like a terrible situation or like an unfortunate situation. And then years later, you just look back at it and laugh. In the moment, you're probably pissed off and frustrated, irritated, and just like, oh, I want to get home. And then you look back on it and you just have to laugh. There's nothing else you can do.
Oh, yeah. I think everyone was like frustrated to start with. And then we're like, okay, there's no reason. Us being frustrated isn't going to make the bus work. So let's just make the best of the situation and just have fun. It's a great story to tell later on. Tell your kids, grandkids, tell your friends, family, like, by all means, let's make the best of it.
Yeah, 100%. So what do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
Oh, this was a tough one because I feel like a lot of the, I wouldn't say it's crazy, but I believe like to the players on what they actually feel works for them instead of like you, like the whole philosophy, like say organizations have their philosophies and standards and stuff like that and ways of how training goes. But I feel like we don't, sometimes we don't listen to the players enough to find out what they actually need or want. Yeah, we go through assessments and assessment protocols. We go through movement patterns and jump scans and strength tests. But I feel like we don't use them as a tool or a resource to find out what they use a lot, what works for them. Or in the off season, we're hoping that they follow the organization's programs, but they have, most of these guys have outside coaches. And I think we don't use the resources enough, like the player or their actual coach in the off season enough, because that's where the main growth and stuff are. And I know I'm not a big fan of the word maintenance. I feel like there's always a way for these players to get better on a daily basis. You can get stronger in season. You can still lift heavy. We just will change some volume, intensity, tempo. There's still a way to get better and improve. But I think if we use the player as a resource as well, I think we could better serve them on a day-to-day basis. Because we can read them and like, oh, you look fatigued, or we can get them on a force play and be like, oh, this is a different jump than you had 2 weeks ago. And are you fatigued? That's where you can start asking a bunch of questions. And I think we as in our realm don't use them enough. So maybe that's what people may think I'm crazy for, because I get feedback from players all the time. What works for you? What do you like to do? How can we change some variations? And I think that builds a rapport with the players, creates buy-in on my end, but also the organization end.
Yeah, I would agree. There's probably two things here that we need to digest on a little bit. But so the first one, obviously talking about the players being resources, and I would agree with you. At my first year in the big leagues, 2021, we had, I think, four guys hit the 10-year mark in the big leagues. And I mean, that's an unbelievable feat to spend 10 years in the big leagues, in addition to all the minor league time that you've spent and everything. So for me, I wanted to learn from those guys and just observe their routines and talk with them. And I think there's something to be said about just discussing things with players and seeing what's worked for them over time and what hasn't worked. And certain guys may not understand it, and they may just come to you and like, hey, whatever you want me to do, I'll do. But there's plenty of guys that have figured things out for themselves and have gone against the norm or against what the organization wants for them in order to try to succeed, right? And I think you probably have to take both sides of that and learn from both guys, the guy that may not have any sort of routine and then like the guy that has an elite routine, right? And I would agree 100%. I think we miss a chance to use the players as a resource and include them in program decisions and that type of stuff, to the point that like nobody knows their body better than their own person, right? Like, you don't know my body as well as I do. You don't know how I'm really feeling. Like, but it takes an honest player to give you that feedback, right? Like, if a guy's like, oh yeah, I'm exhausted, I gotta skip running today, and it's like, no, you're just trying to get out of running, where like you can see a guy like, dude, I'm literally exhausted, I need you to like work with me today, and tomorrow I'll make it up for the next day. Like, those are the healthy relationships. I would agree 100% with you there.
Yeah. I think making sure they, obviously the higher levels, you can kind of use that to our, like use them as to our advantage. But if you're a new guy in the organization, like our goal is to set standards and stuff like that. But we can still find out what they've done in the past, like what's worked for you. Just because you're a new player to the organization, I don't think that can go unnoticed as well. Still asking the right questions, like, hey, you went to this university, this college, or you're from this high school, this kind of program, and what have you done? What And did you find out that this worked for you? What didn't work for you? And I think that can, keeping them part of the conversation where it doesn't feel like it's so one-sided, I think that creates, even at the lower levels, all the way up to the, I'm sure it happens at the big leagues. Like, I don't have any much experience above double A besides working with some of the guys in spring training, but just having a conversation goes a long way.
Yeah. The higher up you go, you start getting free agents from other organizations and guys that have a number of different offseason training programs and philosophies that they've been a part of. And I think it would be foolish to not use them as a resource, right? Like if one guy goes to this private facility, one guy goes to that private facility, a different, like you want to know what they're doing there. One, so that you can work it into your own program, but two, like so that you can actually learn from them and like, hey, this guy uses this. Have you ever seen this before? Like, no, actually I haven't. Like, how did this work for you? Well, it helped me feel my back hip more. I felt more, you know, in the ground. I felt like I was finishing my pitch better, whatever the case may be, like using those guys to your advantage. And then like, oh, maybe I can put that in my program. And if it worked for this guy, it might work for a couple other guys. And then all of a sudden those guys are bought in, and it would just be foolish to not use them as a resource. I would agree with you completely.
Yeah, for sure.
And then the other side of this is you talk about not being a fan of maintenance. And I don't want to skip over that. The thing that I agree with you completely. Right. And it's like, you have to look at what the player's trying to do to get better at, right? Like if you only look at getting stronger or getting faster, or like there's a number of ways that guys can improve in season. And like, maybe the strength training takes a step back, but the guy is improving his swing mechanics. Well, he's not maintaining, he's getting better at this, right? Or, hey, this guy really just needs to get stronger, and, you know, baseball reps be damned in the lower level, and he gets stronger. And then all of a sudden the ball starts jumping off his bat, right? Or his velo goes up. If everything is being maintained and you're just kind of floating on cruise control, then yes, it's a problem, right? But if one thing gets put on maintenance for something else to get better, then I think that's a win, right? Like that's ultimately, that was the biggest eye opener for me when I got to the big leagues, was like how much guys were obsessed with getting better and even like marginally better, right? Nobody is coming in and like, I'm just going to ride on my talent today. I'm good with being okay. Like everybody that's at the top level is just obsessed with getting better. And sometimes it's better swing mechanics. Sometimes it's better sprint speed. Sometimes it's better pitching velocity. Sometimes it's better like routine in the weight room. Like there's always something to get better at. And I would agree with you. I don't like maintenance in the sense of like big picture, we're just coasting and just riding on what we have. I like maintenance in the sense of like, I'm maintaining this so that I can improve here, but then I'll come back to this and that'll make, like, you know what I'm saying? Like having different, different values on different adaptations at different times, and like putting your resources to the relevant things that are going to make your game better. And sometimes it's in the weight room, and sometimes it's in the cage, and sometimes it's ground balls on the field or in the bullpen, but like there's always something to get better at. And it's just figuring out where the resources and the adaptation should be and just maximizing that. That's kind of how I see it.
No, I completely agree with that. It's, if it's taking a step back in the weight room for them to focus on like swing mechanics, but they got better that day, creating dissociation with their lower body and upper body. It's like, let's not just, like you say, coast through the whole year at this metric. Like, do you want to stay hitting 280 all year? Do you want to get better? And there's different ways to get better. Do you want to have your average exit velo to be 98 miles an hour all year? Do you want it to be 104? Like, there's different ways. Just like you said, it's making, maybe putting something on pause right now to get better at a certain aspect, but then hitting play again and hitting the ground running where you left off. So I completely agree with the dissection of what you were saying.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen guys hit weight room PRs in season, even in the big league level. And obviously, we've seen guys hit velo PRs and sprint PRs. Like, it's all about the context and how you look at it. But if you literally, like, show up day one and you're just average and you just float all the way through the year, that's, like, for me, that's a problem, right? But like, if you're actively trying to get better at something, and like you said, the biggest thing is, I'm going to put this on the back burner, but I'm going to come back to it. It's not like I'm going to neglect the weight room completely. It's, I might use the weight room to my advantage to get better at this mobility, to get better at my swing, or I have to improve my strength to improve my exit velo or something. Like, it's pairing the weight room with the goal for the field and ultimately hoping that it transfers over, basically.
For sure.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude part one of our two-part episode with John. I hope you enjoyed this one. It was really good to hear his story and just the perseverance and the effort that he's put into just getting to the spot where he is now. And I think there's a lot of valuable lessons for strength coaches all over to just hear what he had to say. And then also, you know, him talking about interacting with players and really how to maximize those conversations, I think is really valuable as well. So, three things that I took from John in this episode: perseverance, focus, and a good perspective will help you push through the difficult times. Use your players as resources to learn from, and find the ways to help your players improve in different areas of their game instead of just sitting on the word maintenance. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.